The recommendation here is, and this is what I take with me going forward, is always document your assumptions, test your best case scenario first, because at the end of the day, experimentation is all about getting the most amount of learning in the shortest amount of time.
Hi, my name is Romel Santiago, and I'm the founder of Experiment Nation. On today's podcast, we have Zach Leibovich. He is the staff product manager at Tonal. Today, Zach shares with us, while experiments are powerful, we don't always need to run them, how you should always test your best scenario first, and experiment failure isn't always tied to its outcome. We hope you enjoy the episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Experiment Nation. I am your host, Roma Santiago. I'm the founder of Experiment Nation. And today, I have with me Zach, an old friend of mine. We go... How many years? A few years now. I think at the score is when I first met you.
Yeah.
I don't want to steal your thunder. Welcome to the show, and I'd love for you to introduce yourself to our audience.
Yeah. Thank you, Rommel. First of all, thank you for having me. Really excited to be here. Really excited to talk about experimentation. I think it must have been 7 years ago that we.
It's aging this time.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in my head, I was trying to remember, I'm like, I remember overlapping with you at the score. And then we had a brief overlap at Ritual too.
Yeah.
But that was right before I departed.
But just a little bit there. I remember when we overlapped at the score, I was watching you present some, I don't know how much we could talk about, but some of the work that you were doing. And I was like, holy crap, this guy's like killing it. And I was like, I'm going to keep track of this person, and I'm happy we've been able to maintain a relationship. But sorry to cut you
too
off.
Kind, too kind. Let me get into it. I mean, I'll start with the fun stuff before getting into who I am and what I do. But I like to say that I am an optimizer, an optimizer of all things. That's really, I'm ultimately looking at doing things twice as fast or drop the effort in half for literally everything that I look at. It may be innate laziness, but that's just
it's
who
the
I am.
Right laziness, I said.
makes me, I would say, a solid product manager, maybe a mildly annoying husband when I tell my wife that she's gonna get an app because her recipe process isn't efficient, or she's got to move her notes over to some digital product. But that's who I am. I've been a product manager. When Rommel was just referencing that presentation, that was right at the start of my journey as a product manager. I broke into product management about a decade ago, found the craft through an internship at my college. I went to the University of Waterloo. And currently I'm a staff PM at Tonal, which is a digital fitness product, makes a really cool machine, mounts on your wall. And we'll talk a little bit about that later, but this is the new way of working out for me and hopefully for others in the future. Outside of work, I also like to tinker with things, like to optimize. And so I mentioned I like to try to make things easier. So I built two products with help of family and friends. One was making workout planning a little bit easier. You can
I
see
think
the
I
connection.
Remember that one.
Yeah. That work actually started while I was at the score. Shout out to Amish.
Nice.
He helped build the back end for that. And the most recent thing that I've been tinkering with and building with my wife actually is focused on making mindfulness breaks or taking mindfulness breaks throughout the day a little bit easier. So I have like the deck of cards that I can easily reference, but we designed a deck of cards, and on each card you just have a quick 2 minute activity, either a breathing one, meditation one, or movement, which is stretching. And yeah, kickstarted a campaign with that, and have just been kind of cruising in cruise control mode, selling that on Etsy as well as to whoever is interested. So
links, we will definitely include it in the show.
Yeah. I can definitely provide that.
Nice.
And when I'm not on my laptop doing some optimization work or product management work, you'll find me on the ice playing hockey. You'll find me on the golf course. It used to be working out in the gym, and now it's working out in my basement on my tonal.
So being physically active is a core part of who you are. I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Yeah, it's weird. There's that laziness that drives me to want to do things quicker
or more easily. And then you fill your entire day with working hard.
Yeah. Just replace that with activity.
So clearly you're a product person at heart, an optimizer at heart. But you started 10 years ago in product and you found your way into optimizing things. I'd love to hear about your first experience, with experimentation. Is it with product or was it with your life? Or I want to love.
You know what? It was right before you and I worked together at The Score. I was working with Riaz at Zynga.
Oh, wow.
And that was.
I haven't used that name in a few years.
Yeah. At Zynga, for those that aren't familiar with it, all I need to say is Farmville, and people are like, oh, yeah, Zynga. Okay. In Toronto, which is where I'm based, the Zynga company or the Zynga representation within Toronto, they owned a few different games. And so it was, you can think of it as like a portfolio company with a bunch of different games. While I was there, I was working on a chess app called Chess with Friends. Mm. And what was really interesting about the app was it hadn't been touched in about a year or two when I joined. But the team noticed something, which was the day 365 retention. So the people that are still playing the game a year later was higher than most games that they were actively working on. The issue was they didn't have that many new users onboarding, but if the retention is strong, that might prove to be a fruitful opportunity to work on it some more and see if we can get more users into the system, because clearly something's working. Now, at the end of the day, as with all businesses, the top line metric is revenue, right? And so you can only justify spending time on this game if this game is making enough money to offset the working capital that goes into it.
Yep.
And so we were looking at the game. We specifically wanted to pay attention to early retention. We figured if late stage retention is that tight, how do we focus on an earlier stage in the funnel and improve that? And so when we were looking at retention, it's very tightly tied to revenue. Yeah. The more that we get people to play, the more they will see ads, which is how we made most of our money.
I was really going to ask you, what was the model? It's ads. Is there in-app purchases at all, or is it mostly ads?
At the time, there weren't. So there were two vehicles of monetization. One was, it was a freemium app. So you either had the free experience and you watched an ad after every turn that you took, or you would pay for the ad-free experience, which we both know not a whole lot of people do. You make the bulk of your revenue from people watching ads.
Yeah.
And so it is important to understand that, because the way that this app is structured is you're playing with friends. So if I would have you as a friend, Realm, on Facebook, I would challenge you to a chess game. Mm-hmm. I would play a move. Likely that would be the wrong move, because at the time I knew nothing about chess. And then you would receive.
You're the PM, but you know, chess is, you kind of get it, but not really.
Yeah, we didn't even have a research team at the time. And so when I was looking at features, we had a chat portion of the app. And so I would challenge people at the top of the list, which were also high skill level. But the only way to talk to them was to send them an invite.
Yeah.
And so my record was like 3-80 when I first started.
How'd you get the 3? Mine would be 0. Don't worry about it.
Got lucky. They probably just walked away from their phone, and I won just out of.
They just left you.
Yeah. So the monetization model. I send you a move. Or I play a move, you get a push notification, you hop into the app, you play your move. Right after you play your move, you see an ad. And so the more ads that people see, or the more games that they play, the more turns that they play, the more money the app makes. And so when we were looking at, well, how do we get people to play more? One thing that we were seeing was people wanted to play more. They just had friends that weren't responsive, or they didn't have enough friends to play with.
Story of my life.
So it's really sad when I frame it that way. And so we were thinking, how do we get people then to connect? And so we introduced this feature called Playing Now. And all that it would be was when you jump into the app, we would surface other people who are right now in the app, who are at your skill level that you can challenge. Oh, man. And we tested that on a subset of users, and we saw a 20% lift in their number of turns started, which led to pretty much one-to-one with a 20% lift in revenue. And that was the first time that I saw an idea come to life in the form of a product experience, where I saw very clear, not only impact to the experience from a member's perspective or a user's perspective, but also to the business.
So that experiment went very smooth and nothing went wrong, right?
You know what? That was actually, maybe I was sheltered from what went wrong, but my memory seems to recollect only a very smooth experience. But I have had many issues beyond that.
Okay. I know that every time I run an experiment, there's always this, we screwed up. We have to roll that one back. Well, that's clearly because you're the better PM than I am. But over the years, now you've spent building things and optimizing things. I'd love to kind of take a different approach to this interview, because usually we go, what are some of the best practices here from a positive sense? I'd love to hear about some of the mistakes that you've made, because we all have learnings during our lives, that you've had from all these experiments.
Listen, experiments are extremely valuable at deriving impact and understanding what type of influence you are having, but they're not easy to run. Everyone runs into issues or areas where they run an experiment and they're just like, man, that could have gone better. There are three things that come to mind. And for each one of these, I'm going to tie a specific experience to it. The first one is, after my early experience with experimentation, I thought experimentation was not only the gold standard, it was the tool for everything. Mm-hmm. When you have a hammer, when you have experimentation, everything looks like an experiment. I learned very quickly that experiments are powerful, but they're not always needed. And there are certain situations that make them less valuable than others. Mm-hmm. The second one is, this was a learning from Ritual. I spent about, I would say, in grand total, 5 months running a sequence of experiments. Yep. And my one takeaway from that one was always test running the best case scenario first. And then the last one I'm going to tie to my experience at Tonal, experiment failure isn't tied to the outcome, meaning the result or the delta.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds great. I'd love to hear. Okay. So yeah, just jump right into it.
Cool. Let me start with the first one. So experiments aren't always as valuable as we think they are.
This hurts me.
I jumped into...
You're like right there, but... I'd love to hear this.
For most times they are. But there are certain circumstances where they are either ROI neutral or negative. And it's important to recognize when you're in one of those environments. And so the situation for me was coming off the back of millions of DAU, daily active users at Zynga, and hundreds of thousands at the score, I jumped into a startup. I'm like, I'm ready to spread my wings. I know everything there is to know about product.
All five management. Users. No.
Yeah. I know everything there is to know about experimentation and product management 3 years into the craft. Let me see what I can bring to the table for this startup. You can tell I say that facetiously, because looking back, I knew very, very little, but I was ready for the challenge. And I was maybe not caught off guard, but intrigued by the fact that the user base was so small, because that showed that there was a lot of potential to grow the app. But when I say small, it was really small. Like, we're talking maybe 100 DAU.
Wow.
Yeah. And in this environment, I just knew that experimentation, if you wanted to measure your impact, you have to have a control, you have to have a variant. Maybe we can bend like statistical significance ever so slightly, but that was the way of doing things. That's how we should be operating.
So what was your sample size at 100?
Oh my God. So it was the variant here, we were running, we had to do 50-50. And we were talking about real estate that not everyone visited either. And so basically the sample size would have required at least 2.5 months of the experiment running.
Yeah. What was that
time? And we kicked off the experiment, and at the end of it, we didn't see much of an impact. And 2.5 months in the grand scheme of things doesn't sound like a whole lot of time. No. But when you're talking about a startup,
yeah,
the opportunity cost of, not that we weren't doing anything else on the side, but the opportunity cost of waiting that long for results is just simply too high. And so the learning here is there's a cost to experimentation. Before I kind of thought of experimentation as, yeah, it's a tool that is valuable and should be used pretty much every launch that you do. Mm-hmm. But the cost is, there's a cost of building the experience. There's a cost of doing the analysis. There's time, which is also a cost, digging into segments or generating insights. And so I did some research and started thinking, I'm like, I need to know when experimentation is not needed. And so the three situations where I think you'd be better off not running an experiment.
Yeah.
Number one is what I went through. It just simply takes too long to get actionable results. Number two is the downside risk of the change is low. And so if you're running an experiment and control variant either way, like the variant isn't going to make a big difference. You may want to question, like, do we just make the change instead of
a bug fix sometimes?
Yeah. Like a bug fix or a general, you can even say like a feature optimization where it's something that a lot of users ask for. You're not disrupting the experience. It's always great to measure the impact, mm-hmm. but if that comes at the expense of delivering value sooner, you just have to weigh those.
Just jump in there. I think that's something that a lot of product people face, and not so much marketing growth, well, a little bit of growth, or CROs, conversion rate optimizers, where a product manager always has to think about the opportunity cost of their work. You're keeping devs away from a certain feature, or you're holding something back from market. And that all comes across, as you mentioned. I think that's a great takeaway. Go on, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the last one seems so intuitive, but I've made this mistake before, is when the outcome won't actually change your next set of decisions. Mm. And so if you are running an experiment because it's part of a grander initiative, or because it is something that you know you need to do, then in general, an experiment it depends on your speed of learning, but mm-hmm. especially in an environment where it's taxing both on the cost side as well as on the time side, then if your decision is going to be the same no matter what you're doing, do you really need that data in order to move forward? Because at the end of the day, experiments are more than just understanding your impact. They're about learning and informing future decision making.
And that's kind of a different perspective than some places we've worked together where nothing went out without an experiment and you had to report it and had it analyzed by data science. But I like the approach where it's pragmatic, because I remember in my history when I pitched experimentation to product managers, I like the first question they gave me was, well, we don't have to test everything, right? Because I have a roadmap. So yeah, I totally empathize with that.
Yeah, there's a balance, and these situations are, they could be dangerous if misinterpreted. Like, you don't always need an experiment. It doesn't mean never run an experiment, or like only at in very slim circumstances or infrequent cadences do you run experiments. This is more so experiments for the large part should be quite standardized, but there are some maybe 10% of the time where you're better off skipping the
Yeah, I
experiment.
think like framing it as all PMs do, frame their decisions with context, you know, as you as present them to the stakeholders. It's kind of like, well, in this case, we won't because XYZ, rather than just not running it. And that's a slippery slope where they're like, okay, well, we could speed up velocity if we just like stop testing stuff, right? Okay, so that's great. How about what's the second learning that you have?
Yeah, so the second learning is test your best case scenario first. I learned this one at Ritual, where I mentioned spent multiple months on an experiment, which probably should have taken a few weeks to maybe a month. And so context for this experiment, first of all, for those that are less familiar with Ritual, Ritual is a food ordering app. You go on your phone, you place an order, you walk to the restaurant, you pick up your food, you skip the line. That is the main value prop. And so we were going through a massive, while I was there, we were going through a massive period of growth because we were running a bunch of campaigns. And gr the growth was great. The issue was the cost of acquisition was too high. And so next step was, okay, we haven't figured out growth, but growth is in a good spot. How do we ensure that we are growing a little bit more sustainably or economically? And that was measured by reducing the acquisition cost of these new users. And so how does acquisition cost at Ritual work? Well, when you onboard on Ritual, you're given credit to spend at any restaurant. And so we were looking at that credit, where it was spent, and realizing that in certain situations, your users were spending their credit at restaurants that were basically paying Ritual to acquire new users. And so what was going on there was if a user had $10 to spend and they were spending all of that at a restaurant that was paying $5 to acquire them, it only cost Ritual $5 instead of the full 10. And so we looked at them and we said, huh, that's really interesting. What if we can get everyone to spend their credit at these restaurants that are paying to acquire new customers? You can imagine that that would drastically cut down the acquisition cost. And in the end, it did. We got to a point where we transformed the credits into vouchers. Those vouchers can only be spent at certain spots. And we reduced the acquisition cost.
This is Romo Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week, we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch.
The issue is, or not issue, but w the lesson learned here is we could have made that jump. That was where we wanted to go, but we were scared of what we could do to early user retention. And so with credit, we first made it restrictive. You can only spend it at certain spots. And then we changed the value of how much you can spend. And then we introduced vouchers. And then with vouchers, we introduced more restrictions. And so we were basically like taking small steps towards this goal, when in the reality, that end goal retention was still in a good spot. And so the learning here is experiments are rooted in strong hypotheses, but sometimes we let our own assumptions slow us down. And so whenever you're running an experiment and you're thinking, there's no way someone would do this, or I don't think this is what a user wants, those are assumptions. And that means that they're also ripe for learning. And the recommendation here is, and this is what I take with me going forward, is always document your assumptions test your best case scenario first, because at the end of the day, experimentation is all about getting the most amount of learning in the shortest amount of time. And it's always quicker to test the best case scenario, pull back, than to inch your way forward towards it.
Yeah, I like that. The way I view that is, if you're trying to find a maxima, you need to test the extremes, right?
Yes.
If you test small, then you're like, oh, that helped. Test bigger. Well, that helped. But that's going to take you forever to get to. But there is the side where you go, okay, well, I can't go that extreme because my leadership will kill me. So you need to have that kind of balance of test the best scenario that they'll accept. And
yes.
Not to defend you too much, but the environment that we were in was a little bit risk averse. So I get why you got there. Okay, so that's number two. What's number three?
Number three, and this might sound like a controversial one, but I'll explain why I think this is the case. Experiment failure isn't tied to strictly outcome.
Okay.
We run an experiment because we want to change a certain metric. We want to increase conversion. We want to get more people ordering. We want to get more people starting chess matches with their friends. And so that's a big piece of it. However, there's much more to experimentation. Is a tool within a broader toolkit. Experimentation should be used alongside research, should be used alongside surveys. And I mentioned that experimentation is really all about learning in the shortest amount of time possible. And so when I was, when at Tonal, I was running an experiment. This was early on, and it was a pretty meaty one to set up. We were just, we saw that those people that joined programs, multi-week programs on Tonal, they tend to retain better. And so what we wanted to do was we wanted to surface suggestions for them to jump into right off the bat when they first got their Tonal. And we ran this experiment. We saw at the end of the day, we saw like a slight lift in this metric that we were looking at, which is how many people enroll in programs within their first week and how many people stay engaged with in programs in the long term. And so if you look at the cost of the time that went into building the experiment and the true result, one could argue that it was ROI negative. However, because we ran the experiment, we were able to learn a few things that we hadn't previously known. Mm. People were overwhelmed when presented with three or more options. People needed context in order to feel confident in a recommendation. They couldn't just see, here's a great program, you should try it. They want to know why. People need time to experiment with coaches, with content, before they feel like they can commit to a multi-week program. So all of these things are learnings that we didn't previously have, in key learnings that are going to make building product and features in the future easier. And so the learning here is that people tend to associate the success of an experiment with the overall impact that it has had. Yeah. And while impact is really nice and you should be chasing that, there's still an opportunity to learn when you don't hit the metrics, or even there's more of an opportunity to learn when you actually tarnish the experience, when it's a negative experiment, right? You see a hit in the metric you didn't want to see it on.
Like programs that only focus on win rates, or this concept of positive winners, because at the end of the day, experimentation is about learning, and the test may not itself generate the learning directly. It might force you to dig in deeper and you find something, but it's obviously harder to measure, and I get why people don't report on those sort of things.
Yeah. And so that's where I think the success of an experiment, perfect scenario, the golden scenario, is you had a strong hypothesis, you tested it, you've validated your hypothesis, or invalidated it, and you know why.
Yeah.
I'd argue that, like, I've seen experiments run in the past, and I've even been a culprit of this, where you run an experiment, you see the results you wanted to, or at least close enough, and you kind of wipe your hands clean and you move on to the next thing. But you don't analyze, well, what's going on under the hood? Why are people making these decisions? Because that's where the true nuggets are that will help you become a better product manager and inform future decision making.
Yeah. Now, these were all great tips. And, you know, just to summarize, reflect what I heard. So you mentioned three things. The first one is you don't always need to run a test. You know, be smart about it. Be pragmatic about it. Test your best case scenario first. And finally, the outcome of the experiment doesn't necessarily mean it's a fail. Like, as long as you get a learning out of it, that's what you need. But I want to give you an opportunity to share with our audience something, the things that are going on in your world that you want the world to know.
Yeah, appreciate that. I did mention that the product that my wife and I are working on, Rommel, I'll give you the link for that one. It's called Mindful Mix. Nice little project that we built on the side. The other thing that I will gently promote is
you can
tell those that may or, for those that may or may not be familiar with the tool called Coda. It's the next evolution of Docs. It's a great productivity tool. It takes Docs, Sheets, really all of your notes, and combines it into one.
Okay.
The reason I'm bringing that up is because I created a template on Coda that Coda is featuring on email campaigns, and it's designed for product managers or really anyone that's in a core functional team. It's a template that helps organize all of your team artifacts. So for a product manager, it'd be your roadmap, your sprint planning, your team syncs, your PRDs. I can provide a link to that template as well.
Definitely, right there.
Yeah. But that is, I believe this is being filmed on March 28th. That is being announced today and shared from Coda later today.
Oh, dude, that's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Everyone definitely has to check that out. I look forward to downloading that myself. It's been great catching up with you. Don't be a stranger. Good luck with the family life and all that. Congrats to you and your wife. Thank you for being on the show, and take care.
Thanks so much for having me, Rommel. It's been a ton of fun.
This is Rommel Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week, we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch,